Well, hello, hello, hello.
Hi there.
It's Monday. It's the first Monday of the month, and you know what that means.
It's always time for the New Haven Mavens.
I'm Todd Lyon.
I'm Nancy Shea with Limited Voice today.
And this is the New Haven Mavens Radio Hour. On WPKN, the finest station in the land.
Your community radio. You can listen to us at 89.5. You can listen to us streaming on your computer or your other device at WPKN.org. Or within, 48 hours or so, you can find a podcast of our show.
So as you know, the Mavens have a different theme every month, and we're really excited about this one for the month of March. We are talking about extinction. We're not talking about animals being extinct or plants, although we are sad about that and we think about that. But today,
it's the things that are part of our everyday lives,
cultural,
or used to be.
Cultural and social extinction. That's right. So it's the things, the customs, the language in certain cases, that are going the way of the brontosaurus.
And the things that have done this so little by little that you barely even notice until you think about it.
Ooh. Ooh. So we have some great guests today. With us in the studio, we are very, very pleased to have the Director of Library and Information Services at Albertus Magnus College. It's Ann Leaney Panagrossi. Say hi, Ann.
Hello, everybody. How are you today?
We're great.
And then we're going to grab a couple of people on the phone who have specific areas of expertise that they want to talk about. We're going to be talking with Glenn Edwards, who is, he works for a car dealership. And he's going to talk about something that's kind of near and dear to me. I am such a fan of manual transmissions and have never had an automatic car in my life. And I'm kind of panicky that you can't find them anymore. So he's going to talk with us a little bit about the culture of that changeover from standard to automatic transmissions in cars. And then
A little later in the show. Is that what you were getting at?
Right.
Okay.
And then
I'm feeling your pain over here.
Oh, I know. I'm sorry. Sorry, you guys. It doesn't hurt. It's just...
It just hurts us.
Not coming across the way it should. And then we're going to be talking with Pamela La Regina on the phone a little later in the show, too. And she is a calligrapher and an educator. And she's going to be talking about the fact that kids don't know how to write in cursive anymore and various other things. So we'll be talking with her later on in the show, too.
Yeah, and penmanship in general is going way downhill.
I know it. With the keyboarding being the primary writing instrument.
Pamela is very passionate on this topic, and she has a lot to say. So we're really interested in what road she's going to bring us down. She's got a lot to say about things like the alphabet, which in her mind, nobody really thinks much about the alphabet. And I think that might be absolutely true. So let's see. Later on in the show, we'll see what Pamela has to say.
Let's have Ann do a little bit of an introduction so that everybody knows who we've got in here in the studio. And then we'll do our phone outs.
Well, I'm Director of Library and Information Services at Albertus Magnus College. I've been there for 18 years. And I first was hired as a reference librarian and then rose up the ranks and became director. And words, books, all these things are very important to me. And contrary to popular opinion, the book is not dead,
mm-hmm.
nor is it extinct. The delivery might have changed. And I'm a great one for reading pleasure books on my Kindle. And when I was given this by my brother several years ago, in the little pamphlet it said you can store 2,000 books on there. Well, I'm at about 675 now.
Wow.
And I want to take it to the limit to see if I can get 2,000 on there.
That's a good goal. I like that. I like that bucket list.
But at our library, we have done many weeding projects, which is deselecting the collection due to very many things. And one of the things is that professors aren't using texts the way they used to. And we're not a research college, so that's another thing that would affect us for that.
Now, you also oversaw what was a huge effort to move from the written Dewey Decimal System, I mean, writing little numbers on cards, right, in drawers, to becoming digitalized.
Yeah, and in the process of going from Dewey, when we first went to the other classification in the system, which is Library of Congress, then we put our catalog online, and now we're getting very, very digital. It's cost effective. We have about 189,000 ebooks in our collection.
That's amazing. Do you have an idea about the average college of the size of Albertus Magnet? Is that about how many you'd have, or would you have far less if it was a physical book?
Oh, we'd have
far
less.
You know what I
mean? Yeah. We'd have far, far less if it was.
If you had to have physical books, how many books could you have in the library? Just off the top of your head.
Oh, to support all our programs, we'd probably have between 88,000 to 120,000.
Oh, wow. And so tell me again how many you've got digitally?
About 189,000.
Wow, that's amazing. So the resources just are vast, and they keep getting...
Yeah, yeah. They just keep expanding daily, so to speak.
For the average person coming in looking for a book, everybody's used to the card catalogs being there and physically having a card to look at where to go for that book. Would you say that you're a little bit on the cutting edge with using more digital? Or do you think most libraries across the country have kind of gotten away from the standard physical card catalog?
Well, the card catalog now is electronic.
Yeah, that's what I mean, from making that change from the physical cards in the drawer as opposed to going to it electronically. Would you say that you're kind of ahead of a curve, or that everybody's pretty much made that transition?
I think everybody's made that transition now. Because in a college atmosphere, the main thing is access. And with electronics in the digital world, we have access off campus. It's not like when we were in college where I went to school in Rhode Island, so if we didn't have it where I was at school, we'd have to go to Providence and get it. And now I can sit at home and work from home, go into the catalog at home. If I was a student, I could do my homework from home. Anywhere, as long as you have your login and just go in.
Do you find that there's some difficulty with like older people who are so used to not doing things digitally? Do you have somebody there that can walk them through the steps, or do you find like old people who have always done it that way are kind of resistant and say, no, I can't deal with this?
I don't think it's age related. I think it's mindset related.
Okay, yes, maybe I'm being a little ageist with this, but yes, you're right. What I'm getting at is that, you know, kids, of course, they grow up with everything being digital, so that's why I went in that direction. But no, you're absolutely right that it's the tech-savvy versus the tech-resistant.
I imagine that would be more of an issue at a public library, where you're serving college-age kids for the most part.
Right.
I would say that a public library probably have very old people and very... You know, young people. And maybe it isn't. Maybe I am being ageist.
Well, you know, I think it's still relevant to, you know, what that changeover is all about. You know, how accessible it is to people who just have that, you know, there still are people who put up a barrier about technology, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I love, Anne, was what you said about things to do with old card catalog drawers. And what was your favorite?
They make the perfect wine rack. Because you can expand the back of the drawer as long as the bottle is. And the bottle, a liter bottle, fits in there perfectly.
And, you know, most of those card catalogs are beautiful pieces of furniture, too. You
gorgeous.
Know, all the great wood and finishes on them.
I would love to file my wine bottles. Put little ages, you know, the little... I would like to Dewey Decimal System. Wouldn't it be great to have a wine cellar? How about a wine cellar based on the Dewey Decimal System?
I love that. I think that's great.
Let's get on it right now.
Okay. All right. Project.
Speaking of getting on it, it's time for us to switch gears just for a minute. We're going to get back to Ange. We have a lot more to say about that topic. We're going to switch gears for a minute, I think, and we're going to for a second, I guess.
Do we have Glenn yet? Maybe we need a couple more minutes before we get him on the phone.
Yeah, I think we need... just pretend we're not rolling right now. I think we need Steve.
Yeah.
Okay. And because Glenn's waiting to be called at 11:15.
Okay, sounds
okay,
good.
Thank you. All right, so let's pick up this again. We're back on. And yet you tell us, Anne, that the Dewey Decimal System is not by any means dead. It's still very much used. It's just used in a digital format. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, all the classification systems are still going to be used. Otherwise, you're just going to have a bunch of stuff floating out there, and you won't be able to pull it together.
How many classification systems are there?
Well, in the U.S., there's Dewey, Library of Congress. There's some special classifications in special libraries. And then there's worldwide. Every nation has its own.
Oh, it's so
But most of them are based on, you know, it's like Library of Congress being like.
Is that the standard standard measure?
So you don't have any rogue people out there that are doing their own system that nobody can understand?
Probably just in their private homes
right.
or their private libraries.
Or their private wine libraries.
Yeah, right. I know. I was kind of thinking that.
I mean, I wonder what system they use here. You know, folks, if you've never been to the WPKN studio, which is a real treat, and just saw it for the first time, what do you think, Ian?
It's pretty amazing.
It is wall-to-wall, literally, LPs and CDs and even 45s.
Yeah.
Thousands and thousands and thousands in a maze. And it's really, yeah, it's really a wonderful studio.
Yeah, but I
love it here.
I also sort of wonder what kind of system they use. And also, you know, we know that WPKN has to cull things constantly from their record library. And you have to cull things. You have to weed out a lot of stuff from your library sort of all the time, right?
Yes, we
and
do.
There's an aftermarket thing going on right now with textbooks. Do you want to tell the people about that?
It's called Better World Books. And it was started by two college students many years ago, and they recycle them by either selling them to other libraries, sometimes they sell them on Amazon, or send off to other countries. So it's a good way to get rid of books, and you're not throwing anything out, because the biggest sin in the world to people in a city is when they see books in the dumpster, and they don't understand why they're seeing books in the dumpster, so... But it's a way of recycling them, and somebody else is learning from it. So it's a good positive thing.
So they are taking the textbooks or any books, right?
Hey, Glenn,
yes, but otherwise have been either destroyed or recycled or whatever,
and
in a landfill.
They're going to be on air shortly. Okay,
they'll be used.
All right, stay on hold, and we're going to just put you in with everybody. All right. So now I'm going to do. I think I'm going to go this way. I think. Not sure. See if you can hear him. Can you hear him now?
Hello.
Hello, Glenn.
Glenn.
Hi, Glenn.
Okay.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, wonderful.
Good. So now I'm going to hang up.
Okay, we're going to get back to you in just a second.
Okay. So let's just have him talk and just get a level,
okay.
All right?
Hi, Glenn. Give us a couple of sentences here so we can adjust your levels.
No, that's okay.
Hello?
Yes, hi. Just give us a sentence.
I'm Glenn. I'm talking on the radio.
Good.
Okay, good.
That's all we needed. Thanks. So we're gonna get back to you in a minute. We're just going to finish a thought here, and then we're going to introduce you, okay?
Okay.
Okay, Glenn, so sit tight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you know, when Steve was calling Glenn, he was getting picked up.
I know. I was hearing that.
That's
too.
Why I stopped talking. So let's
yeah.
go back.
Yeah.
To,
so we're going to have to.
Let's go back to the World Books thing.
Yeah.
And then start that segment over, and then we'll talk to Glenn.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yep. So go ahead, Ann.
All right. For our weeding projects, we used a company called Better World Books, and it was started by college students about 16, 17 years ago, and they repurpose the books. They will give them to libraries that need them. To schools that need them. Occasionally they might sell a book if they get it. And it's a great company, and it's a great way to get rid of books.
Do they give them to prisons and stuff too? I always love that.
You know, I don't know, but they might.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool. So you're saying that like there had been over the years people who might have been donating to a library or public library seen dumpsters with books in them, and that scene was terribly upsetting, understandably. And so this company sort of came to the rescue of that.
Yeah, and there's several companies out there.
Right, 16 or 17 years ago, that's pretty woke for back then. That's pretty enlightened of them to do. That's impressive.
Young entrepreneur college students.
Yeah, love that. Okay, folks, we have much more to talk about with Ann. If you're just tuning in, this is WPKN 89.5 Community Radio. We are the New Haven Mavens. This is the New Haven Mavens Radio Hour.
And we come to you every first Monday of the month. You can tune in on your radio dial at 89.5. or you can stream live at WPKN.org. And we hope that you'll always listen to us every single month because we have a different topic every month, generally focused on the New Haven area, but of interest to everybody. And sorry about my voice today.
It's Raspy Nancy. Raspy Nancy in the house.
It's my Lauren Bacall.
Yeah, there you go. So listen, we have a guest on the line. I was introduced to this fellow as Glenn Liverpool, and I was actually a little bit disappointed to find out that his last name is not Liverpool, but Edwards. But he is, in fact, from the UK. Are you from Liverpool, Glenn?
I'm not. I'm from a city called Wolverhampton, but
that sounds pretty good.
White Liverpool.
So, Glenn is a car salesperson at George Hart Nissan in West Haven, and we have him today on the radio to talk about something that is really near and dear to several people's hearts, including Raspy Nancy.
I know.
Raspy Nancy has a lifelong love affair with manual transmission.
I am a diehard manual transmission person, and I'm currently driving an 18-year-old car because I don't know if I can find another car with a manual transmission after I have to give this one up. So listen, Glenn, what is happening here? Why are people steering clear?
Good one. Rasp.
Yeah. Anyway, why are people steering clear? Going into the other lane. And, you know, why has the standard transmission gone out of favor? And why are they so difficult to find now?
Well, I think in the United States, the main reason is just convenience. The sheer volume of traffic makes manuals less practical. Because when you're driving in the traffic, you stop in, you go in. So shifting can be more laborious. So I just think people go for the auto because it's just, you just get in there, you turn it on, and off you go. And the car really does all the shifting for you.
Do you think it has anything to do, too, with people multitasking while they're driving now more than ever?
I mean, that can be a cause of it as well, I guess. But believe it or not, in the UK, I know people who multitask while driving a manual as well, which probably isn't the best thing to do. But it does happen. But, I think that's the main reason. Another thing as well, in the UK, for example, if you want to drive a vehicle, you have to learn to drive manual.
Oh, you have to?
Yeah. It's.
So you can't get a license?
You have to do.
Unless you can drive a stick?
Correct.
Wow.
You can take an automatic license, but that restricts you to just driving an automatic car. And as like 80% of the cars in the UK are manuals, that takes out a big proportion of the cars that you could actually drive. So everybody drives standard.
Well, you know, that brings up a point, too, about why this shift. Oh, God, why do I keep doing this? I really am not doing this on purpose. Why it's taken place in the United States, but you know, both the UK and in other places throughout Europe and probably the rest of the world, you know, I've rented cars and they're almost always a manual transmission. Why you talk about the convenience and you know, easier in traffic and that sort of thing. But why is the mindset in other parts of the world not as concerned with that?
Well, I think another reason as well is with a manual transmission, one, they tend to be cheaper to repair, and also they're better on gas.
Oh.
So in certain parts of Europe, believe it or not, it can cost as much as $10 per gallon of gas, more than it does here.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we complain sometimes about gas going up a little bit and whatever, compared to the majority of the world, it's a lot, lot cheaper. So here, if you had the choice between a manual and an automatic, it's not such an important thing for your pocket because the gas is so cheap here.
I see. That's interesting.
Whereas if you're in Europe or Japan, you're paying money for your gasoline. The only other country which seems to be taking a similar turn to the US, doing a little bit of research, is Australia. So in the US...
Is their gas also less expensive?
That is a good question. I don't know the exact
answer
for that.
We're not sure. Okay.
But it says that only 9% of their vehicles were manual transmissions last year.
Really?
Whereas in the U.S., it was about 4%.
Oh, my. I didn't realize it was even that slim. So, Glenn, do you think that the manual versus automatic transmission is tied in with our national obesity problem? Do you think we'd be a lot thinner if we drove a stick? I'm making a joke.
Yeah. If you're sitting in the car, I don't really see how that's going to, like, affect the calories.
Well.
Now, what about safety? Is there any real difference? I mean, I that's part of the reason why I like a manual transmission, that you know, if you need to slow down really fast, you can do the combo of downshifting and braking, and, you know, it seems like...
Yeah, that's true. There's more interesting ways to drive. You're more attentive, definitely, so... For example, if you're stuck on a hill, if you drive a standard, you know, and I know that you've got to be aware, you've got to balance the clutch, you've got to be aware of who's behind you so you don't roll back into them. So it's more of an art, it's a skill.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, a lot of things are going the same way that we used to do, and they're getting automated, and because our lives are so busy and everything. And I don't know. Old skills are starting to die out, I guess.
Well, that's what we're talking about today. So in your job as a car salesman, do you have people come to you who really, really, really want a manual transmission and you have to find it for them?
Yes, I do. Usually it's international drivers for the most part, or people who came here, perhaps the second generation, and their parents used to drive sticks, so it's part of their... part of the thing that they want to do. So I had a guy who came from England about 8 months ago. He had to have a stick, so I had to find him a stick car. Luckily, we had one. We sold him one.
Are they hard to find? People. Are they hard for you to find?
It's getting a lot harder, definitely. I mean, there's still options out there. I mean, we sell Nissans here. It's like the Versa, Versa Note, the Sentra. 370Z, you can get stick options.
Oh, you can?
But for the most part, it's either smaller compacts or subcompacts or performance cars, like high-performance cars where it's a six-speed and people want to have control over the vehicle themselves, getting to 0 to 60, et cetera, you know?
It kind of surprises me that, you know, you think of pickup trucks as... you know, needing to have that extra low gear action if they need to on, you know, rough terrain or whatever. But I think most of the pickup trucks now, too, are automatic transmissions, right?
Yes, they are. I think they're pretty, I think like 99% of them are nowadays.
Yeah.
So it's just the way it's going. I mean, even Ferrari, they no longer make standard transmissions. Everything's automatic now. And cars such as Porsches, McLarens, Lamborghinis.
It's so surprising because you think of the performance cars as always having a standard transmission.
And is it true? I heard a rumor that some of those high performance cars actually have a soundtrack. They make the engine sound like this big purring beast. And in fact, it's so it makes the noise of shifting. Is that true? Or is that a myth?
Yeah. I used to have like an Infiniti, like a G37. And, it's got downshift rev matching, so when you go to brake, it'll go boom, boom, boom.
Wow!
It sounds really good. It sounds really good, but it's just designed to make you.
It's theater.
Have to feel that you're downshifting.
It's pure theater. That's amazing. Yeah, I want you to know that we're in the studio right now with not one but two stick shifting women. Not only does Nancy drive a stick, but Anne. The librarian has two. Mm-hmm. She drives two vehicles. Which one? What are you driving?
I have a Volkswagen Eos and a Jeep Wrangler.
And both of them are manual.
They both shift.
Yeah. And so she's considered.
My good old trusty Forester is also standard transmission. And of course, I always drove a standard transmission. So when my daughter was young or just learning to drive, she learned how to drive a standard. Now, she and her husband both have standard transmission cars, and she calls them anti-theft devices because nobody can drive. You know, if somebody went to steal one of their cars, they'd be baffled and not be able to drive the thing. So I think that's kind of legit.
Well, that's funny you're saying that. I mean, going back to what I was saying, that over here you don't have to learn to drive stick.
Right.
I've had some people come to drive. Sorry, when I say they're coming standard. When I have some
people come to
driver standard, we've had one for a few years. I'm sure you're not like this, but the way they drive them, they're going to destroy the clutch within 6 months. But they think they can drive standard. And
yeah.
I don't know. It's some people cannot drive them at all. You know
I've destroyed them. I'm the proud destroyer of a clutch or two in my day. I had to give it up.
Well, you know, I learned early, and I don't think you know. You were talking about having to learn to drive as standard in other countries. But, you know, when I took my driver's ed training, I drove a standard. My driver's ed teacher said, you absolutely have to learn how to drive a standard. Now, it wasn't that was part of the licensing, but he just felt that it was essential to learn that.
Life skill.
Yeah. I actually learned when it was, you know, the three on the column rather than what we called the four on the floor in those days.
Yeah. Very cool.
Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, again, going back to other things, it's like everything's getting automated, so... Whereas I can read a map or whatever, there's a lot of people who wouldn't be able to get from A to B without navigation.
That's a really good point.
That's actually a wonderful point. I'm surprised we didn't think about that earlier about maps.
Yeah, paper maps.
Yeah. I'm a map person too.
Yeah.
And the cooking even. I mean, most people, not most people, but a lot of people just throw in a microwave meal and wouldn't know the basics of anything more than, I don't know, an egg. Do you know what I mean?
It happens.
Everything's automated.
It happens, definitely. There's a whole generation coming up that, you know, I think that there's also a lot of people who are passionate cooks, too. I think that goes many ways. But in any case, Glenn, we're gonna wrap it up. Thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your wisdom and also sharing your accent, which is ridiculously charming.
It's always delightful.
And, you know, you also explained the mystery to me. I didn't realize at all how prevalent stick shifts are in Europe. I just didn't know that. So, I mean, I was talking to somebody who went on a trip to Ireland. There was four of them, and they rented a car, and only one out of four of them could drive a stick, so she had to do all of their driving for their entire vacation. So, but that explains that. But listen, thank you. Yeah. Again, we've been speaking with Glenn Edwards, who's a car salesman. And we're not promoting or endorsing George Hart Nissan in West Haven. It just happens to be where he works. This is non-commercial radio, not endorsing, just passing along information. Glenn, thank you so much.
Thank you, Glenn. It was really a pleasure to talk with you today.
Todd, Nancy, and Ann, thank you.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, so that's always really enlightening. You know, I hadn't even thought about that map thing.
I'm
a diehard paper map person, too.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of, I have to get that in my head visually to, you know, look at a map and see that that's...
I used to drive around for years, but I always had an atlas in my car, and I would used to brag, I'm never going to get lost. I know exactly where I am. I have the entire United States of America in book form in my car, and I'm never going to get lost, as God is my witness. And now I've lost my skills like crazy. My chops are terrible.
Another thing is a wall clock.
Yeah, I know it. That's true. That's true. I actually went looking for one recently, just this week, for my mother, who at least she wants to see the hands on the clock. And she's like, I don't want a digital wall clock.
I get it.
And it took a while to find one.
I totally get that. I totally get that it also relates to, you know, the earth moving, and it's circular, and it's old sundials. I mean, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
I almost just got a sundial instead.
Yeah. Analog. It's a gorgeous thing when it comes to time. Well, you know, I'm a watch wearer, so I like looking at all the numbers in the hands myself. So.
And speaking of time.
Yes, speaking of time, we are going to segue into another guest who also relates in a way to paper. There's kind of a lot of paper relating around here. We've got Anne the librarian. We're talking about maps. All right, folks, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to WPKN 89.5 FM here in beautiful Bridgeport. We are the New Haven Mavens, and this is the New Haven Mavens Radio Hour.
And we come to you with a new topic every first Monday of the month. So tune in.
So today's topic has to do with things that are becoming obsolete and things that are becoming extinct, not in the animal world, not in the biological world, but in the cultural and social world that surrounds us. So our next guest relating to that, I said guest, I meant guest.
Yes,
relating
our
to
next
that,
guest on the phone is we're being joined by Pamela LaRegina, and she is an educator, a calligrapher, an artist, and we enlisted her to be on the phone to talk a lot about the fact that people's writing skills, the physical writing skills and the ability to write in cursive letters is going by the wayside slowly but surely. Young kids are not being taught anymore.
Before we forget, there's one more thing about Pamela. She's also a Tai Chi instructor. And in her mind, those things are related, and we'll get to that.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
So, Pamela, we'd like to hear from you, if you can give us some background on you, on yourself and your relationship to writing, penmanship, art, et cetera. And I have to apologize again to the listeners. My voice obviously is not where it should be today.
Raspy, scratchy Nancy. Pamela, so welcome to the show. And you are very passionate about calligraphy and handwriting. And when did that start in your life?
Well, I was an aspiring artist for many years. And one day when I was maybe 28 or so, I made my way into the Kay's Art Shop on Chapel Street in New Haven, which
sure.
was many years ago. And I ran across a book, a speedball book on lettering. And I bought the book, and I got very, very excited about it. But ironically, I still had not come across the word calligraphy. In the meantime, I was going crazy doing all kinds of lettering that I thought was great. And
now, did you have a pen and ink with a dip pen?
Yeah.
A dip pen and black ink and a nib, removable nibs on a what's the name for the shaft of a pen?
Well, okay, yes, I did.
I'm getting ahead of you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Here's the first stopgap, because what I really want to do is be able to show and tell, and I'm not able to show. But in any event, on with the story. So someone said to me, you really ought to take a course in calligraphy, and that was my introduction to the word. And then shortly after that, someone said, well, there's a course in calligraphy being given at the Creative Arts Workshop in New Haven. And so I signed up for that. And the clouds parted immediately. It was an amazing transformation that I went through. I was very fortunate to have a teacher named John Rosim Acrylis, who learned his calligraphy at the Rhode Island School of Design, being taught by a man named John Howard Benson, who had written a book called The Elements of Lettering. And people might want to jot that down. Unfortunately, it's out of print at this point, but I think there are still copies available if you're really a good ferret. So two courses with Mr. McCrillis. I was absolutely ecstatic. My creative energy blossomed like an atomic bomb mushroom cloud. And Mr. McCrillis called me one day and said that he had been asked to do a course of calligraphy in Old Lyme, which he was not able to accept, and would I do it instead?
Wow. So you were, this is all from the Creative Arts Workshop?
Correct.
Wonderful. Go ahead.
And so I said yes, because I knew that was the right answer. And then I also said to him, well, may I fashion this course after the course that you gave? And he said yes. Now, keep in mind that that is the creation of a lineage, okay? So we're
going
from John Howard Benson, who studied from others before him, to Mr. McCrillis, who was brilliant, worked for Yale Press and many things, and on to me. And so what happened was, when I started to teach, that's when I started to really, really learn. And any teacher who's listening knows that's how it works. So I was happily forced to be able to articulate well what it was that I was learning. And basically what I was learning was about the alphabet, the workings of the alphabet, the mechanics of the alphabet. You can even say that there's a science there. And so I just became enormously enthralled with, first of all, teaching others and learning from that experience And that's a long story. But also just becoming more and more creative in my own right.
And Pamela, what are your feelings about the alphabet?
My feeling is that the alphabet is, first of all, the absolute foundation of our entire culture. So let me say what I mean by that. Imagine that the alphabet suddenly disappears off everything from everywhere. And what you're going to probably figure out, if you think about it a bit, is that everything would fall apart. People would be in accidents, and people would be dying in the hospitals, and all kinds of horrible things would happen. So the alphabet is just absolutely fundamental to our entire culture.
I have to say, I never thought about the idea of the alphabet being vacuumed up out of our lives and what would happen.
Right, good way to put it. I also might say that the same thing would happen if, instead of the alphabet itself disappearing, alphabetical order disappeared.
Well, that's been a big problem
order,
in places.
As you know, is that A starts first and so on and so on until you get to Z. This is the kind of thing that I bring up when I go to schools. And what I say to my group is, well, what are the three ways that we use alphabetical order? Why do we need alphabetical order? And even with a teacher standing there, nobody quite knows how to come up with the answer, even though everybody really knows. And the answer is, first of all, how else are you going to learn it? There needs to be what turns out to be a very arbitrary order, but that's how you learn it. And then on top of that, then you start to use it. And the way you're using it is to order things, to order actually pretty much any information. Even on the internet, there are things that are alphabetized. But, you know, the back of a book, a dictionary, many different ways for the alphabet order to be utilized to keep us in order. And that I would invite people to think on a little bit.
Sure.
Okay, but there's a third reason. And the third reason has to do with the shaping of the alphabet itself. The way the letters look, the way they work together, how the physical actions that you need to take to actually be able to draw the alphabet. And that piece of information is not within our scope. It is not anything that any of us, I'm guessing, any of us learned about when we first learned how to write.
So you're talking about the teaching of handwriting.
I am teaching,
and the relationship between negative spaces and positive spaces, et cetera, that kind of thing, and
very
shaping
good, yes.
Of words.
Yes, very good, yes. But it really goes very deep, because the alphabet itself, okay, is an absolutely brilliant, intelligent piece of work. It took, I would say, thousands of years for it to develop and get to what I would call a single point of perfection, which is not something that you could literally put your finger on, but I can direct you to good examples. For example, on the Trajan Column, the base of the Trajan Column in Rome, still existing today, are these beautiful letters that are carved in stone. And that's one of the examples that calligraphers usually study. Because, why? Because there's certain, what I would call, Mother Nature's principles that are at work that sustain the alphabet and keep it a whole, keep it an organic whole. And it does have to do with spatial relationships, you know, any number of things. But it's a beautiful, brilliant tool.
Okay, so Pamela, here we are in 2018, and we have a whole generation coming up, all of whom can read for the most part. I mean, there are certain areas where there's illiteracy, but how many of them can write? You know, that's the thing. I mean, the reading and the writing right now, it seems like there's a big disconnect, and we know why. It's because of, you know, electronics. It's because these kids are born, the kids these days, are born with a keyboard under their fingertips, and so what they used to have to form with their own hands is being formed for them by a machine. But so they're still understanding the words, but as far as creating the words themselves, this is where we are lacking. And I think this is what we're talking about here, is penmanship, and particularly going back to the old school of handwriting, where the reason why you had longhand or cursive writing is because you could utilize the most ink out of one dip into the inkwell. And so, but where does that stand now? How does that cursive writing, et cetera, now relate to this modern world where we don't really need it?
In the world of educators, is there a sense for that's become unnecessary to be able to write in cursive?
Of course, if all you're doing is thinking about the end product,
right,
then of course, okay, of course, then I can buy into that. But that is, from my point of view, way out on the limb, goes beyond being absurd. It's beyond being absurd. It's negligence. It's even, from my point of view, bordering on being criminal. Because what you're doing is you're taking away a child's ability to be autonomous. You're taking away all of these marvelous capacities that you would be instilling in the child when you teach them how to write correctly, right from square one, which means not when they're teenagers, but when they're 5 and 6 years old and they're being introduced to reading and hopefully the alphabet, but it's got to be done correctly. And the reason also why nobody's paying attention and nobody sees that it goes beyond the end product is because none of us were taught correctly. I see nowhere in the educational system, not in the best of schools that brag about themselves, I see no indication that they have these ideas and that they're working with these ideas.
Well, is penmanship still a thing? I mean, it was a big deal when I was growing up. You got graded on your penmanship.
It was actually a line item on your report card.
Yeah, penmanship. Yeah. It was a big deal.
All right, but penmanship is when you are given a sample of the lettering that you're meant to be learning, and you copy that sample, and you get to look back and forth and see how you did, and there's a learning process going on, and that's very nice. But that's not learning what makes an A an A. And therefore, the creative possibilities are very limited in terms of what you can do going from learning the old-fashioned penmanship and instead going into what I would call calligraphy, okay? So I think a lot of people, if they picture Western calligraphy at all, are imagining some very fancy lettering, and maybe I tell them that I'm a calligrapher, and maybe they have that image in their mind, and that's fine. But that's not it. What it is learning the nature of beauty, learning the alphabet, and what makes the alphabet itself beautiful, and how to replicate that, and how to make use of it, which ultimately means that, first of all, you're not only learning a skill because of the age that you're learning this, but you're also learning how to learn and how to learn any skill.
Okay, so
that's point taken, yeah.
Yeah, getting back to what the point...
Tremendous value, tremendous educational value. And the problem with skipping over that at that age is that it's the same as when you're learning a second language. How much easier is it for the child to learn a second or even a third language when they're young?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, sure.
So it has very much to do with brain development.
Well, there's these alarming reports these days that kids aren't even really able to properly grasp a pencil when they're coming into school because they're not developing the fine motor coordination. I mean, there's these pictures of them holding pencils like a caveman.
Yes. And that is true, and that is a shame, okay, because it's the wrong path. It's a path that's taking children down an over-techie world, which puts them on video games, and there's just so many things that, I don't want to sound too radical here, but... But it's very disturbing to me.
Yeah. Wrapping it up, though, Pamela, what is your prescription? If your prescription for this would be to really start really early and making sure that there's way more attention being given to the written word and the grasp of a pencil and the beauty of the line and understanding the alphabet much earlier, you want to revolutionize this is what you want to do.
I want to revolutionize it my way.
Yeah.
And I do not know of anywhere else or anyone else who is grasping the full quid of what I'm talking about. Okay, you're not going to find this in a calligraphy, how to do calligraphy type book. It's not there. You are not going to find it, as far as I can tell, from any other teacher. You're not even going to find it on the internet, even given the fact that I myself have lessons in calligraphy on the internet, because those lessons went up about 12 years ago. They're still there, and you can still enjoy them, and you can watch me doing lettering or many other good calligraphers doing lettering. And I would advise you to do that because it is thrilling.
Pamela, can I just jump in, because we don't have a lot of time here.
Okay.
The focus of this is not so much on calligraphy, but the inability of kids to actually learn how to write. You know, and we're talking about cursive writing going by the wayside. But even printing, I think kids are not being taught the importance of that. Now, the thing that I've heard from some teachers is that they don't even devote segments of time in their classroom to teach kids how to write. Is that your experience too? That's not even being taught at all in schools?
Yeah, it is, and it's a travesty. And I'm giving you suggestions as to how it could be turned around. But we need a group of people who are going to stand up to the so-called powers that be, okay? Unfortunately, that's not very easy. I mean, obviously, I don't like it. Obviously, I think it's the wrong path. But how do you turn that around? Well, I tried one time to get in touch with whoever was in charge in the state of Connecticut of handwriting, and there is nobody. I mean, there's nobody in charge. Give me the mantle. I'll be in charge. I'm perfectly capable of doing this, okay? But I think what you're saying is, well, the teachers are saying they don't have any time. And, well, the kids have time to do a lot of video games. They have time to sit there and text each other when they're sitting next to each other.
Yeah.
They have, you know, it's just a matter of trying to sweep away all of this technology, money-making cyclone that just does not belong there. It's unfair. It's robbing children of their brain development. What I'm saying is that teaching children how to write correctly, I'm not, you know, fine, teach them cursive, but that's not getting to the heart of the problem. Okay, teaching them how to write correctly, right from square one, means that you're also teaching them everything else that comes after it, because you're making connections in their brains. It's a neuronal networking situation that you're creating. It's an eye-hand coordination. It's a proprioception. It's even a health issue. Okay, would you like to hear about that?
Actually, no, Pamela, we are running way out of time here. Okay. Very interesting talk. We really appreciate your viewpoints. People can go to your website at supercalligraphics.com if you want to hear more. And if you're interested, go ahead and reach out to Pamela via her website, because this is a lot of interesting stuff. It's getting a little bit off topic for us. But thank you so much. I really appreciate your passion and your knowledge, and thank you for sharing with us today.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Pamela. We really appreciate you being
Again, folks, this is Pamela LaRegina, and she also teaches in Brantford. You can reach her through her website. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
You know, one of the things that strikes me about not being able to write in cursive, and I think you were mentioning this, Todd, that it really has a historical impact on kids learning about their families when they look at the old diaries or recipe cards, I think is what you said.
Yeah, there's a,
that grandma wrote down, and they can't read
it. They can't read it. Yeah, there's a famous story, and it might be true and it might not be true, about this woman who inherited all of her grandmother's recipe cards. She couldn't read any of them because they were all in longhand. They were all in cursive. So, I mean, sure that she can find a translator.
Just the family photographs that have written in cursive on the back,
who it was,
where it was taken. Yeah. And the kids are completely unable to read that. And I think that's sort of
it
sad.
It is sort of sad.
I would love to see a resurgence.
It's beautiful, too.
Yeah.
So I'm going to run down a list. Let's get this.
How much time do we have here?
It doesn't matter because we're not live. These are some things that are becoming extinct among us. Doorbells. Who answers a doorbell anymore? Who has a doorbell anymore? Are doorbells necessary?
I do.
And do you answer the bell when somebody comes? You're not expecting anyone?
I look through the little hole in the door.
Oh, all right. That's pretty good. Bar soap.
That's all I ever use.
Well, you are in the minority, my friend, because right now, oh, actually, maybe not minority. My math is a little off. 48% of Americans believe that bars of soap are covered in germs. And 60% of millennials believe so. Hey, Thomas, you're young. What do you think about bar soap?
I would say that I have a mixed opinion. I don't know.
He has mixed feelings.
In my household, there's probably one or two bars of soap, but mainly we use...
Mainly, yeah. So you still grew up with liquid soap too, right?
Yep.
Yeah. He's a junior in college. So we are talking also about, speaking of handwriting, check writing. I think there's all these people who have a checkbook and they write one check a month maybe for their rent or something.
Well, that's me, but I do know how to do it.
Yes.
What I'm baffled by is somebody young who just wide-eyed looks at somebody writing a check and says, oh my God, you know how to do that? You know how to write a check?
Yeah. And related to that, there's an alarming national... trend to close bank branches. There's people who just don't go to the bank anymore. And I think the post office, too. There's a lot of not going to the post office and a lot of not going to the bank.
Well, right. That the post office thing is all automated, and in large part, so is banking. Yeah. I kind of like my bank branch, but,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Well, we have a funny bank branch. You and I have the same bank branch. So also, along with that, apparently there's been a huge, huge nosedive in the writing of postcards. Wish you were here. Having a wonderful time. Stamp on a postcard. Postcard goes in box. Postcard shows up depending on what country you're writing from, sometimes 2 months later.
Yeah. I love postcards, though.
I do, too.
I actually just got one 2 days ago from a friend of mine. So it's like, oh, this is exciting.
Postcard.
It's wonderful.
Sweet. But, you know, youngsters out there, if you're listening, you know, at my age, you don't need to know what that is. Stop asking. That was rude. Anyway, when I was in my 20s, et cetera, and even a teenager, there was a huge amount of handwritten correspondence that was going around. And you always drew pictures on the envelopes and a lot.
And you'd have pen pals.
Pen pals, people that you corresponded with all the time, that there'd be letters in your mailbox every other day. And it was a wonderful thing where you'd like cherish them. And, you know, it was like getting a really great box of chocolate, just opening that letter and just diving in. And it doesn't happen. I mean, it happens via email and stuff, I imagine. But that handwritten letter thing, I don't know if we're ever going to get that back. But, yeah.
I know. I miss that, though. Those were good days, the handwritten letter days.
Yeah. So, you know, there's another category here that I would like to touch on, and that has to do with what we're going to call presumptive gender language. Like, for instance, my name is Todd. My name is Todd Lyon, and I get letters and postcards delivered to Mr. Todd Lyon all the time. And I think that sort of thing has got to stop. You know, you've got to stop, you know, putting a Mrs. or a Miss or a Ms. or a Mr. in front of people's names, just assuming. For one thing, it's really hard to tell. You can't be sure what the gender of a person is by their first name, and it's really presumptive to do that. All right, we need to sort of get wrapped up here. So, ladies and gentlemen, our show is about to become not extinct.
No.
But it's about to go away.
Just for a month.
Just for one month.
You'll see us back again.
And then we'll pop right back up. Just like the crocuses coming up through the ground, so will we be here.
Every first Monday of the month with a new topic each time. If you have any ideas you think the Mavens should explore, send us an email at new.haven.mavens@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook at New Haven Mavens. We love to hear from you.
We'd like to thank our guests. We had Glenn, quote, Liverpool Edwards on the phone with us talking about cars. Thank you. Pamela LaRegina, the very passionate Pamela LaRegina about calligraphy and alphabets, etc. And with us in the studio, Anne Lini Panagrossi. Thank you, Anne, for being with us.
Thanks, Anne.
You're very welcome. This has been great fun.
Good. This is WPKN 89.5 Community Supported Radio, drowning out the voices in your head since 1963. So let's put a